This is Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, we'll bring back our conversation with two members of the cast, I suppose you could call them, of teens here in Northwest Indiana who have gotten together to create an anti-opioids PSA that's now being shown in a group of theaters here in Northwest Indiana and also will be available online. Also, we'll have Professor Richard Rupp from Purdue University Northwest with us. He's the director of Friday University, which is showing a wide range of topics to make available in courses over two Fridays this month. We'll tell you more about Friday University in just a moment. And we'll also have conversations with Nick Meyer of NIPSCO and Anthony Swinger of the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor about NIPSCO's first natural gas rate increase request in more than 20 years. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
It's gross. I don't really want to talk about it.
She didn't want to at first, but I mean, it's no big deal. Everybody does it.
I was ready, totally ready, because we had been practicing this dance for weeks.
He was supposed to take this girl to this dance, but
I sprained my ankle at track practice.
I hate sharing anything personal. It's so disgusting.
For the dance, I let her wear my shoes and she hated it, but I thought she looked great in them.
He could barely even walk.
I ended up taking some pills for my pain.
Yeah, they were my mom's, but
it didn't go well.
If it's not yours.
Hey, you.
Don't take it.
You won't believe what happened next.
What you get when you put together, number one, a council of local organizations in the form of the Lake County Substance Abuse Council, who's concerned about the recent dramatic rise in opioid use and deaths by opioids, and number two, some local students who are concerned about the destruction and devastation that they've witnessed caused by this epidemic in the lives of their friends and loved ones. Well, you get, as the end result, a public service announcement, of course. Well, put together as well a nationally renowned local director and filmmaker to the mix, and that's how we come up with the Hollywood-caliber, locally produced and casted PSAs that will be showing up in AMC theaters in Merrillville through October 17th. In the studio, we have two of the young people who will be seen in that PSA that you get to see on the big screen. We have Diarnez Gaston, who is a student at Westside Leadership Academy in Gary, and Jakar Ellis, who is with the New Tech Innovative Institute of Gary. And they, as we mentioned, are both, I hesitate to say actors, but I guess you are in a way, in this PSA coming up here, along with some of your colleagues as well. Thank you for being with us here on Regionally Speaking to talk about this interesting PSA. And let me, and also too, we should mention Janae Beleza, who is a member of the board of the Lake County Substance Abuse Council, is with us to talk a little bit about the PSA and about the thoughts behind the PSA. Janae, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you, Chris, for having us.
Let me start out with you first here, Janae. We are all very well aware of the very sad statistics and the problem itself of the opioid epidemic in Northwest Indiana and around the nation. What, of course, as part of the mission of the Substance Abuse Council is to educate and make more people aware of the problem. What came up with the idea of creating this vehicle to try to reach young people and anybody for that matter, but young people in particular, because they'll be showing up at these movies at the AMC theaters in Merrillville?
Well, one of the things that we found interesting was the speed with which this epidemic is escalating. And a lot of it starts with the misuse of prescription drugs. And so we wanted to get the message out that something that seems harmless, like as you'll see in the PSA, it doesn't seem wrong to let your friend use your mom's pain pills because he just sprained his ankle or he hurt himself. It makes sense. It worked for your mom, right? So letting them know that something that seems so simple and so obvious could actually have some detrimental effects that can impact you for a lifetime is a message that I think that needs to get out there. And we were really excited that the youth were willing to be a part of this so that they're friends, their peers don't start engaging in that kind of activity early.
Now, D'Arnaz, you and your colleague Jakar are two, as we mentioned, two of the people that you get to see in the PSA on the screen. Tell us a little bit about the about your classmates and friends that you have met along the way that are the other participants in this public service announcement.
Well, the other two young ladies that were with us, they were very, very pretty, dynamic, and they were very fun to work with. And one came from Highland, and another one, she was a college student. So me, personally, I haven't really worked with, like, a diverse group before. So it was a pretty good experience because I really didn't know what to expect. I was nervous walking into a room with them. But it was like once you really get to know them and started acting with them, it became more of a fun experience.
And then, Jakar, what are your thoughts about having such a diverse group that, that you get to work with for this project?
It was just a very new experience. Like, for me, I never really... I'm new to the acting thing, so for me to actually get out there, do a commercial and stuff, it was just very new. And then I was really nervous, especially watching the two ladies go first, because they was just amazing. But when I came, I adjusted.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about your first experiences when you all got in this, you say, in this room together. How did this all start? Did you... I suppose maybe audition for these parts, or did somebody suggest to you that you ought to be involved in this PSA?
Yes, our director, Mark Spencer, we had done a couple shows with him, and he was like, we would be a good fit for this along with these young ladies.
Now, what did you do in the past that had experience with Mark?
The past, I was in the Watson School to Birmingham, and I was in a Wiz. So, yes, to answer your question from earlier, I am an actor.
And Jakar is the only newbie, I guess. Maybe the ladies are, too. They may be familiar with maybe high school, you know, thespian work, but this is the first time they actually get to be involved in something like this. So you got together in one room, all of you had a chance to meet each other, you know, the first encounter, and sit down. You just do a run through of the script, talk about what you're going to talk about when you're up before the camera.
Yeah, we actually did, but he let us kind of more read it before we actually got into it. We went over it and over and over it to kind of understand and get a feel for each other before we really got in front of the camera.
Yeah. Now, if you had these, I guess, can't call them anything but rehearsals, it was a chance to go, a read-through certainly, and a chance to talk about the script and what you're going to say on camera. Mm-hmm. How many times did you go through this before Mark said, okay, let's turn the lights on, let's get the camera ready to go, let's get this on tape?
I think it was about 5 runs, and really? Then when we was doing it on camera, each line took about 30 takes. It was funny. It was so many takes.
Obviously, nobody really realizes that. That's all the stuff that disappears in the editing process,
yes.
And it all gets put together into one finished product. How much time do you think that you spent in that recording session, that big long recording session, the multi-take recording session?
I'd say probably about
an hour.
Hour or two?
2 hours.
Hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask some serious points here. Have either of you fellows known of or have had classmates or other people in your lives, in your family, that have gone through the problems of opioids and have a chance to see something, unfortunately, firsthand, and it would in turn make you feel stronger about your own feelings and why you feel that this PSA is so important?
Yes.
Would you want to talk about it?
Oh, yeah, sure. I thought I was just saying yes. But yes, one of my uncles, I experienced it a while back. It was pretty rough seeing him do it, but I really didn't know what to expect as I seen him sticking in his arm. And then just the feeling that he gets from it and understanding that you actually have to stick yourself and put drugs in you just to get that feeling, I knew that's something that I never wanted, because eventually, like we said in the commercial, the drug will rule your life. Actually, we did a play called Stand Up, Change Teen Statistics, which we are doing again, and it explains over and over and over how once you take a drug, if you consistently take it, it will rule your life, and that's what the drug is doing to him. It's ruling his life, and he can't live without it.
That's D'Arnaz Gaston and Jakar Ellis. Tell us about what experiences or family experiences that you've actually had in dealing with the problems of drugs and opioids, of course.
Well, my brother, not recently, but a while back, fell into it. And it was really, because he had a hard life, so that was like the only thing he felt as if he can turn to. Mm-hmm. So when he turned to that, it just made everything worse. He recently is just not coming back from like a rehab, and he's really just now getting back on his feet. So I get told all the time, you don't want to take that road, you don't want to do that. It's things that could really damage your life.
Did the ladies that you are involved in the PSA in talking with them, did they have, if they're not here to talk for today, but did they relate any family experiences or personal experiences that they knew about that certainly made them feel stronger against drugs?
Not that I knew of. Okay.
I'm sure they remember. Well, they may have been involved or had family members. We'll just have to kind of hope that that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. Now that you've gone through this experience of participating in a production like this, creating this PSA, I'm sure both you gentlemen and the others involved in the project, I just can't wait to get to see yourselves up on the screen at the AMC theaters in Maryville next month.
Yes, sir.
I'm waiting.
And I should say this is going to start September 22nd and through October 17th. So it's actually going to be later this month into October as well, too.
It's actually starting this Friday.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay, that's better still. That's right. That's better still than September. Janae, let me ask you, what has happened so far now that this project is done and the public will get to see this on the screen through the running of it? Do you know if the Substance Abuse Council is interested in doing more awareness messages like this?
Well, first of all, we're just grateful to have the opportunity to get the message out to the public about the dangers of sharing your prescription drugs. I'm glad, and like I said, I'm so happy that the kids wanted to be engaged in getting this message out. And I'm hoping that what happens is that seeing the message in the format that we presented it, which is much more a day in the life of kids and what happens and them kind of sharing with you, don't do this, as opposed to being told, just telling you not to do it. I'm hoping that the audience will kind of garner a relationship with the kids like, you know, we were able to watching it as we were finalizing it for the theater, and relate to them in such a way that they can relate to similar situations in their own lives and actually be proactive and do something about it and know that the Lake County Substance Abuse Council is available to assist them.
I was thinking that this is a very brief message. It's only about a minute, so it'll be running obviously a lot of times when it's at the theaters during the run here in September and into October. And I didn't know if maybe any thoughts were, now that this part of this awareness campaign is over with, that maybe some something that'll run longer, a little longer messages might be in the offing sometime.
Well, actually, there is. We do have a YouTube page where we're going to post this video. And what's going to happen is, if you'll notice when you watch it, there's kind of a tease of more to come.
Ah.
And the tease will happen on the YouTube channel. So
that's great. Well, that'd be great. You have an opportunity. You can run longer messages and be able to still get the word out. You have to let people know it's going to be on YouTube, mm-hmm. This time around here. One of the things I wanted to ask about here was in talking about this type of way to explain to people, you're hoping that you're not only trying to reach young people your own age, or people just slightly older than you, trying to maybe shake up older adults, and if they're not involved certainly in the problems of opioid abuse, but they have family members that maybe will prompt them to get help for their family members as well. Would you like to see that as one of the end results of this PSA campaign?
Of course,
yes, because I don't just believe the drugs. When they take the drugs, it's not only hurting them, but it's hurting the ones that they love too. And that's something that they should really look at, because my family is deep in drugs and they don't think it hurts us, but seeing them do it and just watching it, it tear you up inside.
That's Darren S. Gaston. He was a student at the Westside Leadership Academy in Gary. And with us in the studio is Jakar Ellis. He is with the New Tech Innovative Institute in Gary as well. And Janae Beleza is a board member of the Lake County Substance Abuse Council. The Substance Abuse Council has put together a PSA entitled Dangers of Sharing Your Prescription Drug. And it's going to run at the Maryville AMC Theaters through October 17th. And you mentioned too as well that the videos right now is on the YouTube page for the Substance Abuse Council, if I understand it, and more will be out there in the future.
Well, we're going to actually wait to launch it until after it launches at the theater because we don't want people getting a sneak peek. Only you were special enough to get a sneak peek.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that because at least we had a chance to play it for you on the radio so you get to hear what it's like. But it's much better if you see it. So, yes. So go to the AMC theaters here in Maryville through October 17th and watch a movie and look for the videos. It'll be a different kind of trailer that you'll get to see on the screen up there in the theater. and both of you, all three of you, thank you very much for being with us to talk about this today. And the best thank of luck you. To you on the project. And we hope that this particular awareness campaign about the dangers of opioid abuse and the epidemic itself will drive home the fact that number one, don't share medicines with anybody and don't take your parents' medicines and take them to your friends as well too. Don't do that, and just stay away from the drugs and to begin with. That would just help out too. So, thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
And remember, if it's not yours, don't take it.
Today is the final day to be able to register online for this year's 2017 Friday University that happens on the Purdue Northwest Hammond campus. There are a lot of things that you have attended if you've been a Friday U attendee in the past, or if you're just a Friday U freshman. This year's fascinating and fun line of activities and missing activities, because there are some things in the course agenda for this year's Friday University that you'll want to check out. And with us to tell us more about this, we have Professor Richard Rupp, who, besides being a political science professor on campus and being long involved in the Friday University, he's also the chief of staff to Chancellor Keehan. Professor Rupp, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. I'm delighted to be here and chat about Friday U and all the good things going on at PNW these days.
This is such an interesting program. Where did the idea for Friday University come from?
Well, it actually came to us from the community. This was not our idea. A group of citizen activists, actually, in the Munster area and Crown Point came to us about 7 years ago, and they said that they really thought the university should provide some source of external courses for the community. And so we did our research, and we worked with these folks, and we designed what we thought was a kind of a fun program that was both for intellectual stimulation and for, frankly, some entertainment. And so we've been offering these courses in the fall for the last 7 years, and we've expanded the program, and including this year for, as you know, having the Times and your panel coming in to talk to our seniors.
Mm-hmm. That's right, and some other interesting things, too, that we'll get into in a little more detail here in a moment. What were some of the first courses that were offered back at the very beginning of the series?
Oh, the first courses, it's funny you mentioned that, because I'm actually looking at the brochure right now. It's a little yellowed. one of the courses was Older, Wiser, and Sexually Smarter, Sex After 50.
Well, that's, so that I'm was sure awesome. That brought a lot of people of interest. I'm sure a lot of people signed up for that. Yeah.
You know, but you could tell there were some folks hanging around the door. They weren't sure if they should walk through or not.
Wow.
But that kind of illuminates the idea that we offer courses from across the field. That was actually by one of our nursing professors. And so the goal of Friday University is always to offer the entire panorama of the university. So we have politics, history, philosophy, literature, but also very much the sciences and businesses. So we try to cover the broad spectrum. Digital photography, we did a class on the Kennedy assassination. So we've covered quite a bit of topics over the years, and this year's is no difference. This year was actually sparked because we had a forum last year, and our alumni of Friday U came in, and we let them tell us what they wanted. And so one of the things they literally said is that they want the Times of Northwest Indiana to come give a presentation on the challenging times we live in. So we're delighted you'll be joining us.
That's interesting. Now, the 2017 Friday University is going to be held on Friday, October 13th, and again, Friday, October 20th, two Fridays that you can sign up for. In fact, that's why we mentioned that the deadline to register is today, so get online and do it, don't you?
You know, Chris, as chief of staff, I now have new power, so I'm using it right now, and I want to let everybody know that they can register into next week, and so you can continue registering, and actually, you can go online to pnw.edu/Friday/university, but you can just give us a call at 219-989-2323.
I guess you just have to have an idea about people who are going to attend the courses here before the day actually starts, so you can arrange for rooms and anything else that might happen to come up along the way, right?
it's no walk in the woods to organize this. But we've done a lot of publicity this year. We've got terrific rooms. And we get a lot of folks to participate from around the campus. For example, this year one of our popular classes is in our really beautiful hospitality and tourism center. So we do two classes over there. We do a very popular wine tasting with Mike Flannery, who's the head of White Lodging. And this year we actually have a course on Thai cooking, because one of our instructors, one of our faculty members, took a group of culinary students to Thailand this summer. And so he's going to take both his students and the students from Friday U into our terrific kitchens at HTM and give them a demonstration of Thai cooking.
Let's take the list of courses that are listed, and you can find out online as well, too. Starting out with the Friday, October 13th, you get to start the whole thing off, I guess, with a chance to explain to people how things have changed in politics, and most certainly in the last 18 months or so.
Yes, we've got a class titled Objectivity, Analysis, and Discernment in the Age of Trump. I actually have two guest panelists on that. One is Dr. Lisa Goodnight, but also I'm kind of delighted we have the past president of the American Psychoanalytic Association, Dr. Prudence Gorgashan, speaking on that panel. And the thrust of that panel is how do professionals do, by professionals I mean social scientists and psychiatrists, maintain their objectivity and maintain their discernment when they have personally some pretty strong views that might not align with the current administration. Because our job as professionals, of course, is not to pontificate and persuade especially our students of our views, but analyze and be rational and not be emotional. But it's not easy, as you know. And so that's kind of that's the topic of that we'll be taking on there.
One of the other topics coming up on the first day of the two for Friday University covers something that maybe you wouldn't think of, that might be impossible to cover in such a course, but the aesthetics of ruins, old and new. And that's something that Professor Renee Conroy is teaching.
Renee's a delight. I've worked with her before. She is a philosopher. And her work, again, is trying to understand the impact of ruins. But she takes us on a rather grand philosophical and historical sweep, because she's talking about ruins, not only ancient ruins, so she's going to take us to Rome and to Greece, but she's going to talk to us about the ruins that we have here locally and how the idea of ruins develops into more of a philosophical journey, but also helps us realize how ruins can be rediscovered. Because certainly if you've been to Rome, Chris, and I probably imagine you have, you've seen how Rome has thrived with its ancient ruins. And so when we see areas in the region that some people might say are of no value or use, that's probably not the case, and so she's going to take us on an interesting journey.
I know that we close out a lot of the activities in the first half of the day on Friday, October 13th, with a discussion about garbology, which is entitled Our Dirty Love Affair with Trash. Tell us about that.
Well, garbology is actually our book of the year. Every year, Purdue Northwest purchases actually about 1,200 copies of a particular book for all of our incoming classmen to read and freshmen to read. And so this year we have this awesome book called Garbology by Edward Humes. And this book, as the title gives away, is really about the culture of garbage and the culture of trash. And so it takes us on a historical journey, but it very much talks about where we are in the United States and where we're going in the United States. And we've got programming for this book all year. We've got actually the author coming in, and we're going to be publicizing that in March, and we'd love your viewers to come here, Edward Humes. He's a big deal. And we have projects going on. We have students doing fascinating research on trash and consumerism. So this class will be taught by Kathy Gelati. She's an awesome professor, and I would definitely welcome folks coming. You don't need to have read the book by the time, but I've read it a couple times, and it reads pretty quick.
That's good. That's good. Also, finally here, I'll mention on the 13th, the Friday of first of the two Fridays, ballroom dancing. That's to help kind of close things out for that particular day. And then going on to Friday, October 20th, the second of the two Friday University session days, you start out with something that philosophy professor John Rowan's going to cover, post-truth and fake news. Tell us about that, please.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, if your panel also touches on that. John is a philosopher, and again, like Renee, but again, folks, it's not all about philosophy, Friday University. But he's taking a different sort of look at this idea of fake news and is taking us into, again, issues of truth and objectivity and teasing out the idea of the changes that we see going on in the United States, where major institutions like the New York Times or the Washington Post or National Public Broadcasting could literally be referred to as fake news by senior political leaders. And so John's going to take us into a journey of that. In his description, he's referencing that we are living in Orwellian times in reference to George Orwell, and I think there may be some truth to that.
Now, there are a lot of things that are going to be on the agenda for the second day of the Friday University. You can go online to Purdue University Northwest website, take a look at that particular rundown, and if you have not yet signed up, you have the opportunity now that registration has been extended till the middle of next week as we get closer to the start of Friday University. Professor Rupp, there are so many things here. We've run out of time to be able to cover them today, but I know they are covered on the PNW website, aren't they?
They are, and I really appreciate, Chris, the time to be on the show today, because we see this as a kind of a public service that we're doing for Northwest Indiana. But honestly, it's a labor of love for those of us who do it, because honestly, these are some of our best students. The folks who are coming in from around the region who come in for this program, they're energized, and they are also very happy that we don't give any tests.
That sounds like it's going to be a great event coming up here on starting on Friday, October 13th, continuing the next Friday, October 20th. We've been talking with Professor Richard Rupp. He is the Friday University Executive Producer, about the upcoming series of programs, chances to attend some, come back to college, or maybe come to college for the first time, depending on how you are, and take advantage of an opportunity to learn something new, learn something different, and that's what Friday University is all about. And Professor Rupp, thank you for being with us to talk about it today.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. You have a great day.
Thank you. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. NIPSCO is seeking a rate hike on its natural gas delivery service for the first time in 25 years. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson spoke to Nick Meyer, who's the Director of External Communications for NIPSCO, about the utility's proposal.
Can you tell me about the rate hike that NIPSCO is seeking, when the utility, rather, filed its petition, and how much you're seeking, and when it would go into effect?
Yeah, well, unlike most companies, you know, which can change the price of their product or their service, you know, on their own without any outside approval, regulated energy providers like NIPSCO must submit a detailed request to change rates. So as part of that, we need to demonstrate evidence that supports the increase and shows how it benefits customers. So there's really two portions of a customer bill. The portion that covers mostly your usage of gas and the price itself for natural gas, which is a large portion of your bill, and that's passed through directly to consumers. The other portion of the bill is really toward things like our pipeline system, maintaining that, our 24/7 call center, our trucks, our vehicles, our equipment, etc. That's the portion of the bill that we've made a request to increase. And it's been actually more than 25 years since those base natural gas rates have increased. Our proposal would show for the average residential customer that currently pays about $50 today, if this were approved, it would be about a $10 per month increase when it's all said and done. And that really wouldn't go into effect until mid-2018.
And how many people would it affect?
Well, this pertains to any NIPSCO natural gas customer. So we've got about 820,000 natural gas customers across really the northern third of Indiana, from the Illinois border to the Ohio border. So very much focused on, you know, improving service, managing costs. As I mentioned, it's been more than 25 years since we've increased our base rates, and meanwhile we've continue to improve service. We've invested in modernizing our infrastructure and plan to continue doing that. And we believe this proposal supports that continued investment in the future.
So why does NIPSCO need the money?
Well, again, you know, it's because it's been more than 25 years since that time, you know, we've made investments in our system. So that's more than $400 million in system upgrades and technology improvements. Meanwhile, you know, things like increased labor, material costs that have changed during that time, you know, we've really focused on managing costs to customers. And so we're at a point where we've made a request to increase those costs to provide the service and level of service that our customers expect.
Is the company in any kind of financial trouble or anything like that?
Well, with any kind of proposal for a regulated company, you know, they have to go in front of the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission to make any changes to what it charges customers. So we've been able to manage those costs over time, and proud of the fact that we've been the lowest cost provider in Indiana and some of the lowest among the nation. And even with this proposal, we expect to remain among the lowest. So again, you know, the changes don't happen overnight. It's about a 10 to 12 month review process, very thorough review, and the public and customers certainly have a role and a voice in that process as well before ultimately the commission makes a final decision on what those new rates would be.
Is there any kind of comment period that to have their say, or do they reach out to the OUCC, or who do they give their comments to?
Yeah, customers absolutely have a voice in this process, and that's how the regulatory review process is designed, to include customer input. So there will be public field hearings in sometime in the December timeframe, and those will be determined and published and announced when that information is known. But certainly the Office of Utility Consumer Counselor accepts comments as well, and that makes its way into the review and consideration ultimately by the commission. Meanwhile, you know, customers are represented by a number of different consumer agencies within the review process. So, you know, organizations like the Office of Utility Consumer Counselor, as I mentioned, generally the Citizens Action Coalition. There are a number of organizations that, again, are taking customer input into consideration, and ultimately, you know, the purpose of this review and our goal is to really strike the right balance of cost and service so that we can continue to provide the level of service that our customers expect.
You said that it would be about a $10 increase for a customer currently paying $50. For how much gas is that? I mean, how much gas are they using if they're paying $50?
Yeah, so the average increase that residential customers would see today, you know, using on average throughout the year about 69 therms per month. So their bill today would be roughly $50. And with this proposal, that would change their bill from $50 today to $60 tomorrow. So, or excuse me, when you know, based on our proposal, so it'd equate to about a $10 per month increase throughout the year. And again, that's just based on the typical or average usage customer.
Can therms be converted into hours? What is that in hours? Like, how many hours of gas do you have it on?
Yeah, I mean, 69 therms a month. I mean, that's for kind of an average household, and that's looking at actual usage from our customers. So that's right squarely in the middle. And so certainly some customers use more than that and less than that. But you know, generally you see that you know, that number a bit higher during the winter months and lower certainly during the summer. And really your driver there is your furnace primarily. But obviously things like your hot water heater. And anything, you know, any kind of cooking inside that uses something that uses natural gas is going to increase that. So, you know, 69 therms represents a month's worth of usage, but, you know, that's just throughout the year. So know that, you know, generally in the winter, customers are using more than that and in the summer less. But, again, on the whole, what this proposal shows is about a $10 per month increase.
So what is a therm? I mean, what does that look like? Can you quantify that? What is that like? Can you put it in a pint? I mean, I'm just curious. What is a therm?
Yeah, so a therm represents, it's a measurement of natural gas usage. So the best way to think of it is like a gallon of gas. It doesn't equate to to necessarily an actual gallon, but it's just a unit of measurement that can measure how much natural gas flows through the pipeline system and into your home and business.
So the request for the hike isn't for the cost of the gas itself. It's for the cost of all the maintenance, like the pipeline and your equipment and your labor.
That's right. The proposal is really addressing the portion of customer bills that has to do with all of those things that go into maintaining customer service, emergency response, investing in upgrading that infrastructure for the future. It's all of those components. Really, you know, the other portion of your bill, that's the price of natural gas itself, which we really don't have control over. That's purely based on how much it costs out in the marketplace. And so we purchase that on behalf of our customers, and frankly, we've been doing a great job at securing low cost of natural gas, as we've been the lowest in Indiana and among the lowest nationally. So that portion we expect to continue remaining low. And you know, even with this proposal that addresses the service portion of what we provide, we still expect to remain among the lowest in Indiana.
And Nick, is there anything else that maybe I haven't asked you about that you could tell me?
Well, certainly another part of this proposal, we expect to continue offering a number of programs that we have today. So, you know, the energy efficiency and energy savings programs would remain available. Energy assistance, so bill payment assistance, we are proposing to continue offering those programs. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, any impact on customer bills is meaningful. But as I mentioned, we've worked hard to manage costs to customers and believe this proposal supports, you know, an opportunity to continue improving service in a way that's going to help maintain low bills again yet for the future.
The bill paying assistance, does that mean that you give them money to pay their gas bill, or you give them a discount off, or what is that?
Yeah, so we do offer bill payment assistance and have for many years, where customers can get assistance through the state and federal programs, but there's also a NIPSCO-specific program that provides bill payment discounts for income-eligible customers. So a portion of that is actually funded by the company. So that program would provide a discount on their bills for what they're paying. And ultimately, again, you know, that helps to keep them warm and safe in their homes, and helps many customers. More than, I think, believe 26,000 customers received energy assistance last winter.
How much do they usually get, typically?
You know, that's going to range. There's usually three tiers depending on their income level, but there's a discount and sort of a formula that's provided, kind of a flat rate discount for each of those areas. In addition, many of those customers are eligible for reduced deposits as well.
How does one qualify for that? How little money do they have to make?
Yeah, those are really going to be based on the income, the federal poverty guidelines. And so that's generally up to the 150% of the guidelines. So that can change each year. The cutoffs are where the breaking points are. We do have another program that extends beyond that 150 mark, goes from 150 to 200%. But the best thing to do really there is, you know, there's a number of energy assistance agencies throughout the region, as well as township trustees. But you know, any customer who's ever experiencing a difficulty with their bill, regardless of their current situation or their income level, we always encourage them to give us a call so we can have the best opportunity to work with them. And most often, we're able to work with customers.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Nick.
Anytime, Sharon.
And Nick Meyer says that there's about a 10 to 12 month review process before the rate hike is either approved or denied, and there will be public field hearings held sometime in December. Now, to find out more about the regulatory process, Sharon also spoke with Anthony Swinger. He's with the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor in Indianapolis. She talked with him on Wednesday, and during the conversation, Anthony explained the approval process for any rate increase that happens to be considered by the state.
So what is your role in what you do?
The Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor is a state agency, and we are separate from the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission. The IURC is the regulatory body that sets rates for utilities such as NIPSCO. The OUCC participates in all cases before the IURC. Our job is to represent the interests of all consumers in each case before the IURC. We have attorneys, accountants, economists, and engineers on our staff. We review any rate request that goes before the IURC, and we weigh in. And the new case filed by NIPSCO is certainly no exception.
Can you tell me about the rate increase that NIPSCO is seeking, that they filed a petition, and tell about what goes in that?
Well, we just received the petition today, and we will have several weeks to conduct our review. My best guesstimate is that we will file testimony sometime in January. So between now and then, our legal and technical staff will be looking this over very closely. We'll be taking a very close look at all of the evidence that NIPSCO has filed. We will be giving this a very thorough review. And the position we ultimately take will be based on the results of that review. But again, we're going to spend the next several weeks, next few months even, taking a close look at this request, and then we will weigh in, again, most likely in January.
Can you tell me about what NIPSCO is seeking, and is this rate increase that they're seeking? I mean, I don't know if you can tell me whether or not it's necessary, but tell me like what they're seeking and how much it would cost consumers.
Sure. As far as the amount of the increase requested, I would defer to NIPSCO to answer that, given that this is NIPSCO's request and given that we just received the petition today. It's premature for us to speculate on what specific recommendations we might make to the commission. When you're dealing with a utility rate case, you're dealing with a lot of complicated and detailed issues, a lot of complicated things from an accounting standpoint, as well as an engineering standpoint and a legal standpoint. But it ultimately comes down to one question, and that is, what level of revenue does the utility need to provide safe, reliable service to all of its customers? We want to make sure that the utility is financially healthy, but at an appropriate level. So we will need to review NIPSCO's request and look at all the details before we formally weigh in.
So with that in mind, when they ask for a rate hike, I mean, is there ever the thought that they're asking for it because they just want more money and they don't really need more money, that they just kind of want like a money grab?
Well, at this point, we don't know. Again, we will do our due diligence and we will closely look over what the utility has requested. In any given rate case, we have to look at any number of issues. The utility does have the burden of proof to show, number one, that it needs an increase, and number two, if it does, then how much. We will be looking very closely at that as we do our review.
How likely do they get their requests granted?
You know, every case is unique, and I don't have specific statistics, nor do I want to, you know, paint too broad of a picture or paint with too broad of a brush. I can tell you anecdotally that there are rate cases in which a utility will get what it requests. Others, the request will be denied. Sometimes the utility gets part of or some of. Each case is unique. We have to look at each case based on the specific evidence that the utility files, and that's a very long process. A lot of work goes into reviewing that. So based on the facts that are specific to this case, we will make a recommendation, but it's simply too early to speculate on what that recommendation will be.
That's Anthony Swinger. He's the Director of External Affairs with the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor, talking about NIPSCO's natural gas service rate hike request that has just been filed, and we'll keep you apprised on how that happens to work out. On this Monday, it's time for another edition of Eye on the Arts with John Kane.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Phil Potempa, the marketing director for Theater at the Center at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you.
Nice to have you back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
tell us about the current show.
All right. Well, right now, our big fall musical that we're in the midst of, we're in the middle of Big River. And Big River, it goes all the way until October the 15th. And, you know, it's something that a lot of times I see a lot of theater, you see a lot of theater. This was not a title that I was even familiar that was out there. So, you know, it's one that's very popular because it's the telling of Mark Twain's, the musical telling, I should say, Mark Twain's Huck Finn. So it has all his favorite characters like Tom Sawyer and, of course, Big Jim. And what happens is that it's their adventures down the river and what characters they meet along the way. A musical telling, but there's also some humor and an important message along the way as well.
Yeah. Well, I remember being in some sort of a Tom Sawyer musical when I was a little kid, when I was in elementary school or maybe junior high school. It certainly lends itself to. And Roger Miller, the country singer.
That's right,
he helped
yeah.
to write this, right?
Yeah, the man behind all those ballads like King of the Road. He's the one that did this, and it played on Broadway. So it was on Broadway in 1985 and then was revived again in 2003, did a tour in 2004. So it's been out there. And Roger Miller, he wrote all of the music for this, and it swept a lot of the Tony Awards for that year. So 7 Tony Awards, Best Musical, Best Original Score, and Roger Miller is just a legend with storytelling through music, with the music and lyrics that he has created for this show.
So how will the stage at the Theater at the Center be transformed to create the banks of the Mississippi?
It might require some imagination, but not as much as you think. Ann Davis is our set designer for this, and Ann is a familiar creative face right there on staff at Theater at the Center. So she has the banks sculpted, and it's very imaginative. So if you're thinking of those graceful oaks and weeping willows that grace the banks of the river, you can expect those, along with a lot of the decor and, of course, the costuming that our costume shop is creating is just fantastic for those period pieces with the big hoop skirts and just a lot of it that is a kind of a throwback to a more gentle, gracious time, I guess, when people had leisurely afternoons.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
That you make it sound so tempting and enticing.
Good, we need that today.
Yeah, enticing. So, what other any other special events connected to the show or otherwise?
Mm-hmm. You know, when we're not doing our main stage musicals and our plays, we always like to bring in special event concerts and headliners. And so, in October, we have a couple great things. We have a salute to Ella Fitzgerald, the First Lady of Song, as the show is called, and that's by Alex J. Ross, and she's fantastic. She has two performances that on October the 22nd. It's a Sunday, so she has her afternoon at 2:30, and then a 7 o'clock performance. And then many, many of your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the Purdue Glee Club is a favorite that we have at our theater every spring. Mm-hmm. We decided to do something different, never on our stage before. We've decided to invite the ladies, the Purduettes, their Glee Club will do one performance on Saturday, October the 21st at 3 o'clock. So it'll be a lot of fun with all those favorite songs from the American Songbook.
That's going to be a very musical weekend.
It is. It's a very busy weekend.
I wasn't aware that there was such a thing as the Purduettes.
He wasn't either. Wow. Where have we been, John?
I don't know. Under a rock.
Exactly.
But I've heard of Ella Fitzgerald.
That's right. Good.
And I love Ella, so that's fantastic. And then the new season has been announced. What can we look forward to?
We spent September renewing all of our subscribers, and we have a popular subscriber program. And so now it's time for new subscribers to come on board. So here's the titles to entice you. And again, it's such a steal of a deal to get the whole shebang. So Steel Magnolias launches in February, followed by our big spring musical, Forever Plaid, returns to our stage. The summer, this one I'm really looking forward to, The Lady with All the Answers. It's a play that's a one-woman show all about the life of Ann Landers and as she writes her famous newspaper columns. And then in the fall, we're ready with Ghost the Musical, just like the film with Patrick Swayze and Whoopi Goldberg and Demi Moore. Mm-hmm. And then our big holiday musical for Christmas time is going to be Miracle on 34th Street. So jam-packed season.
That sounds like a good selection.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
The Ann Landers play sounds fantastic.
Oh, it's very juicy. It's, you know, between her and her twin sister, Dear Abby, this is on the eve of Ann writing her most famous column when she has to tell her readers she's about to be divorced. So the woman with all the answers does not have the answer for this one of those she advises so many people each day. So it's very compelling.
I bet the wigs are going to be fun.
The wig is so key, and I always say that. I've seen a couple versions of this, and I'm telling you, the wig is make or break. It's got to be that bouffant with the sweep.
The sweep.
That's it.
Exactly. I love that. Oh, that'll be fantastic. Do you know who's going to play Anne already?
It has not been cast yet, but we're getting very close.
Oh, good. All right. Well, that'll be fun to find out more about later. Well, thanks, Phil, for being here, and thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
John Kane talking with Phil Potempa, the marketing director for the Theater at the Center in Munster, about the performance of Big River coming up. You can hear this conversation and other Eye on the Arts conversations on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. Hope you'll be back with us tomorrow.